this is what you're fighting for. I mean, every day you're out there.
What they're doing is blowing people off.
If you continue to look the other way and shut up, then the oppressors, the authoritarians, get total control and total power. Because this is just like in Arizona. This is just like in Georgia. It's another element that backs them into a corner and shows their lies and misrepresentations.
This is why this audience is going to have to get engaged. As we've told you, this is the fight.
All this nonsense, all this spin, they can't handle the truth.
War Room, Battleground. Here's your host, Stephen K. Bannon.
It's Monday, 15 April, in the year of our Lord, 2024. Something we have, it's tax day. Make sure that they get paid. You've got to underwrite. Remember, you're underwriting your own destruction, so why not? Just go ahead and pay up, underwrite, send the big check, right? Because we know the check's going to be big because you're getting financially hosed minute by minute by this government. We've got a lot to go through this afternoon. Of course, we've been covering nonstop the fiasco of President Trump's, the persecution of Donald J. Trump. I want to pivot here and pull the camera back to make sure we can understand, reset exactly where we are in this debacle that the Biden regime and our sociopathic overlords have put us. We're going to actually have in a moment, I've got Joe Allen here and Dave Walsh play a part of a podcast from Kara Swisher. If you're not familiar with her name, she's one of the best, I guess it's business journalists in the tech side. She has a couple of podcasts. She's written a bunch of books. I think she's the editor over there at New York Magazine, but she's incredibly influential. The sociopathic overlords in Silicon Valley look at her as like the end-all and be-all of kind of modern business journalism. I mean, she's been all over Elon Musk. She knows all the ins and outs of all the sociopathic overlords' business, and they frequently on her show. She actually had the author, Isaac Arnsdorf, finish what we started, because guess what? What do the sociopathic overlords fear before we go from late-stage capitalism, finance capitalism, and crater into tech feudalism? Well, they fear MAGA, and they fear the War Room Posse, the America First Movement, all of it. All the little men and women out there, the common man and woman that are part of this movement, they fear you. Before we start that, I've asked Dave Walsh to jump on here. Dave Walsh. There's well, there's an article of the week, and I asked you to drill down on, because you're the first guy to actually tell the American people this, about the Chinese capacity of coal-fired electricity, of coal-fired plants, which they're in the process. They're the leaders of the criminal leaders in Beijing are smart people, and they're tough people. They're figuring out, particularly with the whole world going to electric vehicles and data centers, and the need for electricity, as Dave Walsh has shown, the need for electricity is going to be like exponential. Of course, the leaders in the West, they're deindustrializing in Germany, and the leaders of the United States are doing everything possible to take out continual cheap electrical production offline. So the business model is insane. It just makes no sense rationally. Well, the Chinese Communist Party doesn't have a problem with that. And they don't care what they put in the atmosphere. Whatever they put in, they put in. They want electrical capacity, and they're going to do it. Oh, by the way, just announced today, massive layoffs at Tesla. Now, they're saying it's because of all the competition from China, et cetera, for these electronic vehicles. Number one, the demand side of the equation, the bottom's falling out because they can't charge the things. The batteries run out. There's no capacity. It's just a grab bag. Here in the United States is the Biden regime, who can't run anything right, shows you. But also the Chinese Communist Party, that is the financing part of Elon Musk. And this is one of the reasons I have such a big problem with Elon. One's transhumanism, and the other is his control by the Chinese Communist Party. They've set up all kind of alternatives in case he gets off the reservation, that they've got now got letting a million flowers bloom, and they're affecting the EV business. So, Dave Walsh, let me turn it over to you. I want to go with Tesla first and the implosion of the Tesla business model and the wipeout of the Tesla stock, and then talk about how the Chinese Communist Party. Remember, these guys are known to be on every side of every trade, right? They want to be in control. What instrument they control through is kind of irrelevant for them. Dave Walsh, your thoughts about bad day for Elon Musk in the electrical vehicle industry.
Well, Musk announced today laying off 10% of his global workforce in his global EV business, Tesla, which would be about 13,000 people, because for the first time since 2020, year-on-year demand in units is down. It's down about 8.5%. Deliveries down 8.5% from last year, year-on-year. First time a decline since 2020 in their published demand data. And yet another issue on the global competitive front, they're dwarfed by Chinese capacity to make cars. The Chinese capacity to make end-to-end vehicles and then export them massively globally, which is what they want to do, starting with a small beachhead here and batteries only to him, but expanding, they now produce 8.5 times more EVs per year than his entire company, Chinese manufacturers of EVs. So they now dominate the space globally. The longer-term strategy for Tesla is at issue. You know, we got massive cost issues with these, massive inconvenience with these. People finally coming around to the fact that government is acing them out of choice, acing them out of consumer choice by attempting to force them in Western Europe and here, force people to buy EVs only. There's quite a rebellion against that among people. Turns out the clients buying them are the wealthiest communities in the country, tend to be Democrat communities, tend to be the wealthiest 10%, have something like 40% of the demand for these. So overall, you're also looking at a supply chain that the Chinese totally control to make them. The electric motors, the EV, the batteries themselves, the lithium ion, the copper, the cobalt, the motors, and the rest of the apparatus in the vehicle, they control 100% of the supply chain for these vehicles. Therefore, they want to make them end to end. In time, they'll render Tesla irrelevant because their goal and objective is to take over car making also. We'll talk later. They've basically begun to take over effectively power generation equipment manufacturer for North America. They've taken over 75% of the announced megawatt supply of equipment to make electricity and about 43% of the monetary value of that, a business they weren't even in here only 5 years ago. Primary power generating equipment. That's a business I had been in my life's work. Just amazingly rapid pace with which they're taking over basic commodity electricity now also, in addition to cars.
Do they realize that the future of the world is electric? I mean, you got this, and they need electrical power, data centers, the artificial intelligence. Joe Allen, who's going to join us in a minute, has been making the case that the energy needs, the water needs for this in a digital world, in an artificial intelligence world, is so enormous given where we are today. Does the Chinese, because they mouth climate change. I mean, you know, one of the things Kerry and these guys talk about, we can't put tariffs on, we can't do the decoupling we did in the Trump administration. We can't confront the CCP. People know that I've been fully sanctioned by the Chinese Communist Party in every aspect. As the first civilian in American history, and I wear that proudly. But John Kerry's the world, and the Bidens and the Yellens got a kowtow because the number one thing is not avoiding a kinetic war. The number one thing is that we need them to work as partners to make sure climate change doesn't hit us. Yet everything they do, every aspect of the business, their business model is to hell with climate change, to hell with anything about what the West is concerned about in this kind of cult of climate change. It's about getting down to the brass tacks of how they dominate electrical production on a global basis, and particularly have as much cheap energy as possible, not just for consumers, but for their industrial power. Dave Walsh.
They understand deeply manufacturing anything from basic steel making to specialty steel making to plastics to composites to lithium ion batteries to cars, pulp and paper, anything, any kind of manufacturing is heavily electrically powered dependent. It's been forever. That's been the case since electricity was distributed in mass quantities beginning in 1890. They understand this deeply. They have managed to talk us out of it with duplicitous stories of climate change, of we need to be on the CO2 abatement, we need to be on net zero. We've bought into this. We're destabilizing our economy. And what even in the news media here today announced that in the last year, we've had a 92 gigawatt swing, 20 more gigawatts of baseload continuous duty coal shut down over here in Western Europe, while China has put in capacity 72 more gigawatts of it. Just to give you a reference how meaningful that is, 72 gigawatts is the size of Entergy and Southern Company combined. All power generation of those two large utilities in the U.S., that combined is 72 gigawatts. That's what they've built just in the last year in coal plants. And then they've got 243 under permit and beginning construction for the next 4 years, more coal plants. So he's boosting up coal power production. It is cleaner. It's ultra supercritical technology that was originally invented here, Germany and Japan, that they're using. But this is the primary engine of their industrial economy to compete. And knowing that AI and server centers and data centers can only be run on 24-hour a day, huge quantities of electricity, not 4 or 5 hour a day solar or 7 hour a day wind, must be run on continuous electricity.
Hit me back again with that, because this is the future that that when you take the energy side that Dave Walsh walks you through, and you take the demand side that and not the consumer demand, but the interim demand of the data centers of artificial intelligence that Joe Allen walks you through. This is why you have such a huge gap between what in the U.S. they're talking about in a post-industrial economy, because a post-industrial economy, note to self, doesn't mean less power that you need. It means more power that you need. And when you look at this call to climate change, what they're talking about here in Western Europe, and particularly in Germany, it's the most bizarre thing I've ever seen, because they're sitting there talking about this transition, and this transition, it's not happening and it's not going to happen. It's bizarro land, given what they've laid out already is going to be the demand side of the equation. The people that have a hard-headed approach to this is our number one existential threat, the Chinese Communist Party. They are very coldly and with a lot of calculation. And I think they're a big part in back of working with these groups in back of the misinformation and disinformation about the whole climate change, the underpinnings predicate of climate change to begin with. Because you see two industrial societies go in radical different directions. And one, whether you like it or not, has an internal logic to it that builds for a not just manufacturing superpower, but a post-industrial economy that on the digital demands for electricity will be there. And you have, because it's not just coal-fired plants, they're also building every nuclear power plant you could possibly build. And here in the West, we're doing the exact opposite. It's gutting our economy. And these are the types of things you can't turn this ship around quickly. You're making these decisions every day today that literally are going to lead us down a path of economic destruction, full economic destruction. And even if a Trump comes in, it's not simple to put the rudder over to the right and turn this around. Dave Walsh.
He completely understands what he's doing. And it's done with duplicitous language that here we would call and do call lying. I mean, he's talked about Xi Jinping. Oh, we're going to begin strictly controlling consumption of coal by 2025. And by 2030, we're going to begin to scale back maybe 30 gigawatts of it. Well, what he's talking about are the very old plants that aren't scrubbed, that aren't supercritical, that are quite dirty, beginning to phase those out for the newer ones that are ultra supercritical, high temperature, much more efficient coal plants that are much cleaner. By the way, there is such a thing as clean coal. It's done at very high temperatures. Japan has lots of it, is investing in lots of it. China is primarily investing in that over the next 5 years. Knowing that as long as he panders, climate change is important over here, he's selling us products. He's selling us all the thin film PV, 87% of the world supply of it, all the inverters, now many, 30% of the transformers, and all of the lithium ion batteries for utility storage all comes now from China. So he's pandering a sales pitch, that which they're not doing themselves, because to be the dominant manufacturer of these things, you've got to have continuous duty ongoing power, which is what he's building in coal plants and now gas plants, because they've taken over about 50% of Ansaldo Energia, gas turbine company, to bring more gas turbine technology into China to begin to build gas plants, leveraging off the pipelines he's getting from Russia and now Iran for gas that has now solved their gas problem. that's going to be more fossil fuel, which for China is a good and prudent thing to do. To buttress their already huge manufacturing sector. They know exactly what they're doing. And by talking us out of using electricity that's needed to compete with them. This is happening. It's amazing. We're going to need a lot of strength in a new administration that really understands these things. I'm not sure regulators, attorneys, just with that background, yeah, a lot of former government experience only. I'm not sure that gets us there. We need people that really understand the basics of all of this, how this fits together, and what's happening to us concurrently. This is now a disaster. I'm not sure attorneys are going to work their way out of it, no matter whether they had prior experience or not in this. I think, you know, we've got to have folks that understand this stuff well to be looking after how to manage this and bring back industrial strength to this country.
My investment banker days at Goldman Sachs and my own firm for, 20, 25 years, I can give you some empirical evidence. I don't remember many, and there may be one or two, major industrial concerns that employed 50,000, 75,000, 100,000 people that would announce 10% layoffs globally, that businesses were not in a massive nosedive. And of what eventually happened is that a major restructuring went on in that business. I know we're not here to give financial advice, but just objectively as you look at it, this announcement today came as a shock to people. I mean, people saw the demand, but there's something, and I've said this long, and people know I'm a critic of Elon Musk, but there's been something wrong with this company for a long time. And we're not here to give financial advice, but as you look at this, and it's not just demand, but you look at the entire sector, the electric vehicle market is in for some turbulence, I think you could say. Dave Walsh, your thoughts?
Yeah, Kevin, I'm not a financial advisor. I will say, though, about a business model where you're dependent on one country for about 60% of your supply chain and of the massively critical elements, the two electric motors and the EV battery itself being about 60% of the content of that which you're manufacturing that is coming from your dominant competitor who already produce 9 times more than you of the whole device end-to-end that you're competing with them on, that does not augur well for a long-term business plan. Dependence on your primary competitor for 60% of the componentry of that thing you're making in this market, and where they make 9 times more of that thing you're making than you do already, and they serve a home market that's about 4 times bigger than the one here. None of this augurs well for any business plan for EV manufacture over here. Then you go to, okay, why do we need it? Does Toyota not have a better mousetrap with hybrids that are half the cost, proven technology that they're very focused on? Maybe let's look at that as in opposition to standardizing on what the Chinese want us to. Total dependence on them, not just for batteries, but the cars that they're in also. That's where they're headed. And based on their sheer size, they'll win that game with him. They'll win it. So again, not a financial advisor, but it is a very troubled business model, very troubled. Entire dependence on China for the critical components of what he's doing.
Dave Walsh, thank you so much. Where do people go to get your social media? We'll spend a lot more time because energy is going to be central to the run up to the November election, because you can't get this economy sorted until you get the energy, the full spectrum energy dominance that President Trump had. Where do people go? Where do people go to get your social media?
Well, thank you, Steve. On the Getter and Truth Social at Dave Walsh Energy. Thank you.
Dave, thank you so much. Joe Allen, we're going to play in the, I think we'll have it ready in the next sector, maybe here in a minute. But I want to just go back to Elon Musk. And I'm not here to spike the football to the fanboys. But it's central to his rise in the fanboys' minds and kind of the consciousness was he's such a great businessman. He was the Henry Ford of electric vehicles. This has been a catastrophic announcement today because it shows you how I think he got played by the Chinese Communist Party and he kowtows to them. They're his paymasters. But that this business model, the stock's gotten crushed. I think the stock's lost $1 trillion in value since its peak. As he bought Twitter and other things. And I realized Darren Beatty and some of my dearest friends and colleagues are high in the fanboy realm. But with everything else, like if you see what he bragged about and what he said about Tesla, and now you see the catastrophe Tesla is lay off 10% of their workforce in one day and talk about having a major, you know, industrial restructuring, it doesn't make you too, it shouldn't make you too happy about where the chips, where his chips in the brains are. I realize it's all been great today. It all been great. I'm not sure how much the media is really putting scrutiny on, but just your thoughts before we go to Kara Swisher, who is kind of the journalist, the leading journalist that covers our sociopathic overlords, and Elon Musk being number one. Your thoughts?
You know, Steve, the kind of spectrum between the AI is everything, AI is nothing, or the brain chips are everything, brain chips are nothing, or electric vehicles are everything. You know, the hype spectrum is always going to be somewhere along that. And with all of Elon Musk's projects, you hear from the fanboys and from Elon Musk himself that this is going to be everything. This is kind of the way in which the tech sector in the U.S. and across the world works in general, right? You have to kind of sell yourself as being the ultimate revolution. It will change everything. And then you have the detractors. No, 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 it's nothing. It's nothing's going to happen whatsoever. AI doesn't exist, blah, blah, blah. They'll never perfect a brain chip, blah, blah, blah. Well, it's always going to be in between. And so, you know, Musk is well known for overpromising on everything, right? Like the fully autonomous vehicles were right around the corner for years now, kind of like very similar to the flying car situation. So I always try to find some place in the middle. Where is it actually at and where is it going to go? Where it's at is fairly easy to evaluate. But where it's going to go isn't. So Musk, with his all of his enthusiasm and all of his kind of, I think, in some ways, underhanded techniques to, you know, reassure the shareholders that their money is being well spent, that he always overpromises. And so in this case, you can see the fruits of it. You can see it in a very practical way. What is it, some 14,000, 10%, 14,000 Tesla employees that are hitting the sidewalk right now? Some people would say that's just great business. He's downsizing. Well, expanding the business to that point wasn't. And so the loss in stock prices also show, I think, a great miscalculation. That's why I think, Steve, that, you know, everything from the big picture of the singularity to even small things like if you integrate AI into your education or into your hospital or into your military, it's going to put you ahead of all your competitors. It's going to fix everything. It's always going to be somewhere in between the absolute naysayers and the people who are just doe-eyed optimists. Yeah. And that's what I see in this, just a reality check.
By the way, for the Masters Tournament over the weekend, for the because they played to the CEO's market with IBM and Mercedes, virtually every spot over the weekend was all about artificial intelligence to coming into these businesses. If you don't think it's in the C-suite and that's all they're thinking about, you would be incorrect. One thing we've had Dave Walsh on, and you've mentioned it, for the post-industrial economy, the digital economy, they've made this thing, it's all being sweetness and light, you know, all going to have green fields and green pastures, and we'll have this digital connection. They don't talk about the underbelly of that, the underside of that. The power necessary to do that is orders of magnitude higher than the powers that we need for steel plants, et cetera. The water needs and the power needs for artificial intelligence, for the data centers, is of order. It's mind-boggling. And you never hear that brought up in the connection with climate change, because climate change is kind of their religion, and part of the way they're going to get there is through artificial intelligence. Why does the media overlook that? Why do hard-headed business people don't talk about that? Because that difference, that delta, is going to have major implications, massive implications for this country, the citizens, and quite frankly, the people in the world. Joe Allen.
Yeah, I think that a lot of it is just a conflict of interest. So you have the issue that you want, most of these media companies are very reliant on big tech, either for access or for advertising. And many of the people in the media are actually quite on board with this sort of total transformation of humanity. It's the ultimate progressivism. So, but then there's also just the one of the solutions to climate change that's put forward a lot. You hear this a lot in the World Economic Forum policy proposals, is to use artificial intelligence to rake over all of the data that's being gathered from the Internet of Things to understand exactly, down to the smallest detail, to understand exactly how much energy is being used per household, per business, per vehicle, so on and so forth, and use AI to identify those areas where more electricity is being used, right? So AI is now set up is the savior from climate change. We'll use AI to streamline the economy and streamline people's lives. But as you say, you have to use a ton of electricity in order to train any large model. I really got my head wrapped around this. I reviewed Kate Crawford's book, The Atlas of AI, a couple of years ago for Chronicles. And it's only become more and more pronounced since then, but she lays out in great detail how not only do these data centers use massive amounts of energy. So for instance, GPT-4, nobody knows for sure, but GPT-4 from OpenAI used roughly 0.02% of all of California's power usage to train GPT-4. I mean, that sounds like a small fraction, but when you consider the size of the state and the scale of that project, it's amazing, and it's only going to become more and more ravenous. And Crawford points out that it's using up tons of power, but also they are strip mining the planet for the minerals. Those are really damning facts.
Joe, just hang on. We're going to get into Kara Swisher and our sociopathic overlords. It's revolt against MAGA in a minute. Birchgold.com. In a time of turbulence, gold has been a hedge for 8,000 years of man's recorded history. Birchgold.com/Bannon. You get the end of the dollar empire for free, but you can also talk to Philip Patrick and the team. Call them today. Get online and get in touch with them today. Birchgold.com/Bannon. Now that we are launching into the general election season, Patriot Mobile wants to celebrate with a very special offer. Just in case you haven't made the switch to Patriot Mobile today. Until March 31st, you can get a free month of service. That's a free month of service when you switch to Patriot Mobile. All you need to do is stop procrastinating and go to patriotmobile.com/Bannon. That's patriotmobile.com/Bannon and use the offer code SPRING24. That's patriotmobile.com/Bannon and use the offer code SPRING24. That's it. It's that easy. Patriot Mobile offers dependable nationwide coverage, giving you the ability to access all three major networks, which means you get the same coverage you've been accustomed to without funding the progressive left. When you switch to Patriot Mobile, you're sending the message, just like you all did on Super Tuesday, that you support free speech, religious freedom, the sanctity of life, the Second Amendment, and our military veterans and first responder heroes. Their 100% U.S.-based customer service team makes switching easy. Keep your number, keep your phone, or upgrade. The Patriot Mobile team will help you find the best plan for your needs. Remember, Patriot Mobile has 100% U.S.-based customer service. Get your free month of service and get it today. PatriotMobile.com/Bannon. PatriotMobile.com/Bannon. For the free month of service, put in the code SPRING24. That's PatriotMobile.com/Bannon. SPRING24. When you make the switch, you get the free month. Or you can call 972-PATRIOT. That's 972-PATRIOT. Action, action, action.
Are you tired of progressive corporations and exhausted trying to keep up with all the virtue signaling when you're simply trying to buy products? Progressive corporate America continues to push messaging that further alienates conservative Americans, all while eroding the future of the American dream. It's prominent all over the country. Companies like Starbucks strong-arming their customers to support abortion. Financial services like PayPal canceling customers for their political views. Makeup companies like Maybelline making a mockery of women by supporting transgender models. And beer companies like Bud Light forcing gender ideology on you when all you want is to enjoy a cold beer. Thankfully, we don't have to fund these companies any longer with our hard-earned dollars. With Public Square, we now have a solution. It's simple. Join the movement of millions of patriotic Americans who love truth, our country, and our Constitution at publicsq.com. That's publicsq.com. Public Square is an app and website where you can get connected to tens of thousands of businesses from all different industries that share your value for life, family, and freedom. Whether you're looking to buy coffee, find a new athletic clothing that knows what a woman is, and shop for clean skincare, or simply find a new restaurant in your community that won't lecture you about your political views, publicsq.com is your resource. Public Square also offers discounts to many high-quality businesses on the platform so that you can actually receive incentive for spending money with companies that don't hate you. Public Square is free to join as a consumer or a business owner, and you can get started today at publicsq.com. Remember, either as a consumer or a business owner, download the app now. That's publicsq.com, publicsq.com.
True or false? Using your tax refund to pay off credit card debt is a smart thing. Actually, that's false. DoneWithDebt.com published a brilliant strategy designed to let you keep your hard-earned tax refund and reduce or eliminate credit card debt. Most Americans owe thousands in credit card debt. In fact, Daily Mail's got a story that 56 million Americans carry credit card debt, and that debt will take years to pay off, if you pay it off at all. Done with Debt found that filing bankruptcy is usually not the answer, and taking out loans to pay off credit cards usually increases the debt. When you engage Done with Debt, their legal experts and skilled negotiators take on the credit card companies for you. Their winning strategies are designed with one goal: solve your debt situation quickly and permanently. First things first, chat with a Done with Debt strategist and explore your solutions. Some debt fighting strategies are time sensitive, so you'll need to move quickly. For a free consultation, visit donewithdebt.com. That's donewithdebt.com. Do it today. Take action.
More than just beautiful dance, it's a touch of the divine. More than just legends, it's the beautiful culture and wisdom of China before communism. More than just a performance, it's an experience that awakens the soul. See it at least once in your lifetime. Shen Yun, an all-new production every year.
Go to shenyun.com. Make sure you can see the great culture of Lao Baijing, one of the great classical cultures in all world history, civilization, destroyed by the Chinese Communist Party, just like the Marxists are trying to destroy traditional American culture here. Okay, by the way, people that like the geopolitics we go through, that like this, you know, Jim Rickards is now a contributor here, but he's also got this monthly newsletter called Strategic Intelligence. You can go to Rickards War Room. That's all one word, rickardswarroom.com, and go check it out. Get a special deal on his letter, newsletter, Strategic Intelligence. Got the capital markets, everything about international finance, national security, and geopolitics. Okay, check it out. Kara Swisher joins our – Isaac Arnsdorf joins her on her podcast, a very influential podcast for the people that Joe Allen covers every day, our sociopathic overlords from Silicon Valley. They fear – and what they fear is the War Room posse. They fear the little guy. Let's go ahead and cut in. We'll watch. We'll listen to a little bit of this, and then Joe Allen and I will come back.
Isaac Arnsdorf is a national political reporter for The Washington Post and author of Finish What We Started, The MAGA Movement's Ground War to End Democracy. Isaac, welcome.
Thanks so much for having me, Kara.
Earlier this week, we talked about these issues around dictatorships with Ruth Ben-Ghiat. You're our follow because we thought it was important. And it's a topic I'm thinking about a lot, especially because I'm thinking about Steve Bannon almost continually, who you write about a lot, which I appreciate for people to understand how important he is in all this. But this is a book where, for once, Donald Trump is not the main character, as I said. It's about MAGA as a movement. Talk about why you wanted to dig into it and why you made Steve Bannon such a big character. It's absolutely correct to do so, but talk about that.
Well, thank you. Yeah, it's the book is kind of like a search to discover Trump anew. I mean, he shows up at the very beginning, and then we see people kind of hearing him and trying to contact him, but we don't actually meet him until the very end. And, you know, part of that was just like, you know, what else is there to say about the most famous person in modern human history? But part of it is also like, you know, I started the reporting at a time when Trump was actually out of the picture, right? This was early to mid 2021. He was basically in hibernation at Mar-a-Lago. And it was actually the movement. It was his supporters as harnessed and guided by Bannon, who through their activism at the ground level, paved the way for Trump to make this comeback. It was not at all clear or inevitable that we would be where we are now.
Right. You know, Bannon is, you know, I think of him as a marketer in a lot of ways. I pay a lot of attention to what he says because he's quite brilliant on communications, marketing, and he has a media background for people who don't know it. He was part of a lot of weird things, too, including the Biosphere. He's a longtime media executive. He's a little Roger Ailes in that way. So let's talk about a couple of things. You interviewed him several times over the last few years. You write he believes that the MAGA movement could, quote, represented a dominant coalition that could rule for 100 years. Sounds very Third Reich in that regard. And I recently interviewed Tim Ryback about how Hitler did a similar kind of revival of himself. Talk about Bannon's role here and his and especially before and after January 6th, because he's got his own legal problems, obviously, which he has tried to squirrel out of.
Yeah, well, you know, there was the first indictment for the fundraising for the wall that he and the other people involved were actually spending on themselves, allegedly. But Trump helped him out with pardoning him for that. And that actually really helped him, you know, in that moment right after January 6th, when, you know, again, Trump sort of disappeared and a lot of pro-Trump voices were disappearing from, were getting deplatformed from mainstream social media and weren't getting a lot of mainstream news interviews either. That really kind of supercharged the development of this alternative ecosystem of MAGA media. And Bannon really became the sun of that solar system. And it helped that he, you know, had the validation of that Trump pardon. But you're also right to think about Bannon, you know, really the weird period for Bannon was when he was a White House or campaign strategist. I mean, he came on through Breitbart. He came on as a media figure. And so there's something very natural about him as this outsider media figure, actually.
Yeah, one might compare him to Goebbels. Honestly, you would in a lot of ways, but also brilliant the way, I hate to compliment Goebbels, but he was brilliant in terms of selling Hitler. Talk a little bit about, you know, what is his role? What is his role has developed? He obviously was on the outs and then he was in trouble legally and then he came back after the pardon. He has his show, The War Room. I spent a lot of time focused on Steve Bannon, I have to tell you, myself. Talk about, what would you say? You called him the sun. How would you explain that a little further?
Well, actually, I literally just came here from the War Room. Before this, I was doing an interview on his show. We're neighbors mm-hmm. on Capitol Hill. So, you know, wow. I just gone through the looking glass and back out. But, you know.
About your book.
Yeah,
about
exactly.
Your book about him. Okay.
Because, right. You know, it's kind of their story. But the case for their story not being, you know, when I first heard about that Bannon was telling Trump supporters that they needed to go become low-level officials in the Republican Party. You know, it's sort of like, mm-hmm. okay, well,
down
you know,
ballot.
But there's a lot of stuff that people talk about online. And what matters is, does it actually cross over into a real physical political action? And what became amazing to me about this story is that I would call around to local party offices all over the country, but focusing on the key states and say, like, are people coming out of the woodwork to be precinct chairs, which is like a nothing position that no one's ever heard of? And the answer was yes. And so that's when I knew that is actually the power of Bannon, is that what happens on his show doesn't stay on his show. It actually crosses over into action. And he's very intentional about that. What he is trying to give his listeners a feeling of empowerment and agency, and particularly in that particular time after January 6th, when many Trump supporters were so confused and disillusioned and disoriented about what happened, that guidance was crucial.
How do you assess him as person? Like, you were on the show, obviously, I wouldn't say you're friendly with him, but you know him and spend time with him. How do you assess him as a power figure?
He's very smart. He really does read. I mean, he reads voraciously. And, you know, there are times when I feel like it's Steve Bannon's world and the rest of us are just living in it, that he does understand, like, he is a generational talent as a political strategist in kind of understanding the mood of at least a part of the population and understanding how to channel that into meaningful political action.
Nice to meet you. This guy is such an interesting character. What do you think his end game is when he, I don't know if he's married or when he's with people he trusts, you know, he's not a young man. And they say, what is your end game here? Like, what are your goals? What do you want to accomplish? If you were to try and look into his soul or his head, what do you think the end game is for Steve Bannon?
Well, there was a point in the reporting where he said very explicitly to me, I'm not in the rebuilding business. I'm in the tearing down business, right? So he views history as a cycle of building up and tearing down, and he wants to be an active agent of that tearing down, and so that something new can be rebuilt. And what he has in mind is redefining the two-party system. So instead of having two national pluralistic parties, you'll have a left-wing globalist elitist party and a right-wing populist nationalist party. And he thinks that's a rubric for the nationalist party to dominate.
Right. Of course, he's using the word nationalist, which has its recriminations of that. So he doesn't want to be there. He wants to, you know, I always say some people just want to burn down the world and that they, you know, they're like, they want to change it. I'm like, no. They want to burn it down for the next thing kind of thing. How does he react to that idea that people are kind of onto him on that thing? I don't think he cares, right? Correct? Because he talks to you, right? I wrote him once. He wrote me back in 5 seconds. It was really something to see, right? And you don't usually get that from figures because he's got his finger. He knows who everybody is, correct?
Yeah, but as you know, as a media figure, he appreciates the importance of media. You know, he's not one of these people around Trump who, or like Ron DeSantis, who like really believe we make stuff up and we're the enemy. He's much more like Trump in the sense that he is dying to use us for his purposes. You know, he is unapologetic about using terms like nationalism, and nationalism is a hell of a drug. But he is a little bit sensitive about, and we got into this a little bit on the air just now, he is a little bit sensitive about this idea of ending democracy. And he points out accurately that that this precinct strategy, what the Trump supporters are doing, is using the machinery of democracy to try to achieve their political objective. Now, but it's important to understand that democracy often ends not at the end of a rifle, but at the hands of its elected leaders.
Democracy. Hello. This is precisely what the Tim Ryback's book is about. It's that Hitler used democracy to end democracy. That's nonsense what he's saying to you. Anyway, Scott, go ahead.
What role is he playing in the election for 2024?
From what I understand, he is not the campaign CEO like he was in 2016. He is not frequently in touch with Trump himself, like other advisors. He is in touch with some members of Trump's team on a fairly regular basis. But it's helpful to Trump to have that little bit of kind of critical and plausible distance, while at the same time you have Bannon kind of as a laboratory for developing the movement that fuels Trump.
Mm-hmm. And in terms of I would imagine, you know, one of the things he called Trump was his instrument, right? That he, when he saw him coming down the escalator at the Trump Tower, he thinks Trump is not dumb, but that he's just the instrument to getting what he wants, correct?
Well, he thinks that Trump viscerally understands the aesthetics of power and how to make himself a vehicle, a vessel for the grievances and desires of a lot of Americans. And Trump has the charisma and the fame and the stature to do that. But Bannon is and Bannon and Trump have slightly different goals. You know, everything for Trump is about himself. And when Bannon describes him as his instrument, what he's talking about is trying to channel the movement into an institution of the party where it can transcend the limits of being a cult of personality around a single leader and actually achieve the durability through the party structure that it would need to be a 100-year regime.
Yeah, that's why it's not going to work, just FYI. Anyway, it's been a busy week for Donald Trump and his legal team trying to put a stop to the hush money trial. It's not working. It's slated to begin next week. He loves to do those delay tactics. I know you've been following all that. I just would love you to talk about the Trump legal issues helping him with these MAGA supporters that you've been chronicling.
Yeah, so there was an amazing moment where I jump in
for a second. We want to get to all this also right there. And it's one of the reasons, Joe, that you came on as our editor for all things transhumanism. The Silicon Valley, our sociopathic overlords, and Kara Swisher is, you know, she's editor of New York Magazine. She's got this huge podcast. All of the people that lead Silicon Valley come on her podcast. They're she's very familiar with the business models, the Elon Musk, the Facebook crowd, Google, all of it. And you see right there what, and she said, well, it's not going to work. Kara, I respectfully disagree. Not only is it going to work, it is working. What we're building is a grassroots populist nationalist movement to fundamentally change the direction of the country. And one of the most fundamental changes is we're going to stop the abuses of working class people with this late stage finance capitalism. And what we're not going to allow to do is to allow the sociopathic overlords that you interview all the time to run this country as they do. We're not going to let people that are either close to being on the spectrum or just total geeks to run this nation. The people in this country, working class and the middle class of this country, are taking their country back and they're going to run it. And whether you guys like it or not, it is not just going to happen. It is happening. And that's one of the powers, I think, of the book, because the book gives an unvarnished opinion. It's not all sweetness and light. There's a lot of characters. And remember, they're obsessed with the fact that they're the pro-democracy party, but that we are actually participating in the precinct strategy and taking over the school boards and taking over your local town council and taking now the national convention where you're all going to be delegates. You're participating in democracy like Edmund Burke would like, but of course that's not good enough because Donald Trump's Hitler, and what you're going to do is elect Hitler with a massive landslide, and he's going to run the country. Joe, you see this all the time in transhumanism. They try to hide all that too of what they're trying to do because in the political sphere of what we're trying to do, it's overlaid with what Silicon Valley is really working on, which is a fundamental transformation of Homo sapiens in essentially human nature, of which we're fighting. Your thoughts right there is you can smell the fear coming out of Silicon Valley about our populist movement, sir.
You know, listening to that conversation just sounds like every conversation I've ever had with the kind of cosmopolitan, sophisticated types in university or just living in big cities. They are, I guess, very talented at critiquing their enemies with almost zero self-awareness. You know, just listening to it, it's like, well, God forbid Americans were to actually, you know, take the reins and determine their own destiny. But people like them, I think that, you know, just to bring in a crass South Park reference, they are so intoxicated smelling the smug that they are emitting around them that they can't see the forest for the trees. So, you know, relating it to the technological element, what I hear a lot from these people, there are a lot of leftists actually who are very, very opposed to Silicon Valley and the ideas of transhumanism.
Yes.
But in the mainstream, yes. Not yes. So much. And I think it's because transhumanism represents just an extension of the progressivism and the hyper-focus on intelligence and credentials and the kind of intellectual structure that they believe should be running the country, that a technocracy, a rule by experts. And so the Kara Swishers of the world or Ezra Klein, so on and so forth, but whatever critiques they may offer, they still see technology as a means of enacting the sort of liberal left, oftentimes super multicultural, you know, the mass immigration, the various kind of sexual deviances that they endorse, all of this. They see technology as a means of inculcating that in the rest of the populace, a sort of backwards rubes and flyover country. But on the other hand, I think a lot of them, certainly some of them by their own admission, also see this massive transformation as being also in line, not just a vehicle for the more social and economic agendas that they want, but as we move more and more into a world in which these companies are implementing AI and using it to actually transform the psychology of the world, even beyond their own left liberal framework, they see it as an extension of that. It's the next level progressivism. You know, of course, we have plenty on our side, as we mention it all the time, the Peter Thiels, the Mark Andreessen, so on and so forth, who see a very right-wing way of enacting the technological agenda. But
I'll
say this, Steve, in closing, I can't imagine these people are getting paid by you, but they just gave you a phenomenal advertisement. So, you know, thank you, Kara Swisher. We appreciate it.
Joe, where do people get your writings? You're going to be with us on Thursday out in Las Vegas. We can't have a gladiator school unless we talk about one of the main things, and that would be transhumanism. Where do people go, sir?
I encourage you to pick up the book anywhere books are sold, bookshop.org, Amazon with the palm payment, or canonic.xyz, Dark Eon, Transhumanism and the War Against Humanity. Maybe Kara Swisher will pick up a copy and see maybe what some of the underlying ideologies are that she is backing. Find all my social media at JoeBotXyz, and of course, warroom.org under the Transhumanism tab. Thank you very much, Steve.
Thank you, Joe. And by the way, thank Kara Swisher. Actually, I do listen to the podcast all the time. It's what we try to do is immerse ourselves in many different voices. You just can't listen to your own side. That's one of the reasons we start every day normally with cuts from MSNBC. In an information war, you have to know the battlefield. I want to really thank our sponsors, Birch Gold. Make sure you go check it out. We've been with them for, what, 3-4 years? Gold now is at an all-time high. We kind of told you we're not financial advisors, but the underlying macroeconomic forces driving it. That's why I go to birchgold.com/Bannon and talk to Philip Patrick and the team today. I really want to thank the team at Sacred Human Health. The feedback that we have gotten on grass-fed beef livers and also their other products. That's why I want you to go to the site. You've got shout outs. You've got recommendations from the War Room Posse that are right there. You can read them all, but make sure you go to sacredhumanhealth.com. Grass-fed beef livers, the greatest concentration of nutrients known to man or the animal kingdom. You'll feel a jolt over time, at least the folks that have taken it are, and they recommend it. So go check it out today. Public Square, we're trying to build the alternative economy. There's no better company out there than Public Square. Go to publicsquare.com. They finally got the name after they went public. publicsquare.com. Log on, get the app, check out the tens of thousands of companies offering quality products and services. Most importantly, they support what you stand for. They don't hate your values. Lou Dobbs is next. We are back in Lower Manhattan tomorrow morning at 10 a.m. See you then. Right now, millions of Americans face prescription medication shortages. The FDA's medication shortage list currently has over 120 prescription medications listed. Some patients are being forced into more expensive substitutes, while others are rationing what little medication they have left. Don't get caught unprepared. That's why I want you to pick up a Jace case today. The Jace case is a pack of essential antibiotics that can treat a long list of common bacterial illnesses, including UTIs, respiratory and skin infections, plus much more. And each case can be customized for your specific needs with dozens of add-on options. Just fill out a simple online form and Jace handles the rest. From the online evaluation to licensed pharmacy delivery and ongoing care,
Visit JaceMedical.com and use code Bannon at checkout for an extra discount. That's promo code Bannon at Jace, J-A-S-E, JaceMedical.com. Get the Jace case and get it today. Action, action, action.
Room at checkout to save 67%. Do it again. War Room Health, all one word, warroomhealth.com. Go there today. You need, if you're going to be part of the posse, you need a strong heart. You need a lion's heart. How we're going to do that is with Salty. Go there, do it today. Check it out.